man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Rosen intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. Alongside Anita Marks, I'm Lance Menno. Good to be with you. We apologize for some of the technical difficulties, but we will be with you for the next 60 minutes, breaking down all that is happening with respect to the New York Giants. We'll look ahead to the week with the Cincinnati Bengals for those joint practices. We'll get into some of the latest training camp news, the injury report. The depth chart is set to be released over the next 60 minutes, so we will bring you that once it comes down. And we'll also reminisce and reflect on Frank Gifford's career as the late great Giant passed away over the weekend at the age of 84. Don Maynard, Hall of Fame wide receiver, will be joining us momentarily to reflect on Frank Gifford's career. They both played together during the 1958 season in that 1958 NFL championship game, which was labeled the greatest game ever. So certainly a lot to tackle over the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also hit us up on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We will get to your phone calls. We will get to your tweets a little bit later on in the program. But as I mentioned off the top, first part of the program, we are here to reflect and reminisce on Frank Gifford's career, and we're kind enough to be joined by his former teammate, Hall of Fame wide receiver, went on to play for the New York Jets, also helped them win a Super Bowl, Don Maynard. Don, Lance Menno, Anita Marks here on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Oh, real fine. Thank you.
Well, Don, unfortunately, the news came down over the weekend that Frank Gifford passed away at the age of 84. As I mentioned off the top, you played together during that 1958 season. What was your reaction when you heard the news of Gifford's passing?
Well, very sad. You hate to see anybody pass on, and that's just the way it always is, you know, and especially someone that you've been friends and my situation with them is just outstanding because, you know, he was ahead of me some, and I admired him and I watched him in every aspect of life as a ball player, but also as a great individual.
Well, if you can, I mean, if kind of share with us, you know, you come in, and I'm sure you, in 1958, wanted to learn a lot from Frank Gifford, based on the fact that both of you played so many positions in your tenure in the NFL. Kind of share with us, what was that like? Did he mentor you? What was that experience like?
Well, I think they were just about three rookies made the ball club back then, and I was one of them. When I first met him, we trained in Salem, Oregon, if you can believe that, at Willamette University. But I had kept up with them some, you know, naturally, and Kyle Roke was a Texan and a guy I'd about before I got there, and Kyle told me just watch himself, but main guy you want to watch is Frank Gifford, and whatever he does, you'll know how to do it. And I think without a doubt, being able to watch at all pro at right there at the beginning, learned things from Frank that it would take someone else to learn it on their own. But here I had the privilege and pleasure of watching every day the way he ran pass routes and the way he caught the ball and the drills and all. So I like to think that I was fortunate to get learning over a quick time that some people else may take 4 or 5 years.
Don, you mentioned that he was a versatile player, defensive backfield he played in, wide receiver, running back. You moved around yourself as well. What was it about Frank Gifford's skill set that enabled him to play multiple positions? Why was he such a versatile player?
Well, just the fact that, you know, he was serious about the game, naturally. And so, you know, me as a rookie, I wanted to be like him because I had heard about him earlier and kept up with it. He was such a class individual on and off the football field, but just being able to see him do his football ability different ways every day in workout, you know, man, people or players, they might take 4 or 5 years to learn what I learned in one day or 1 week, and then naturally in 2 or 3 weeks as we played the exhibition games, and then naturally later into the season.
Don Maynard joining us here on Big Blue Kickoff Live, Anita Marks, and of course Lance Meadow. Don, I would like to say that I can only imagine, but I can't even imagine what it must have been like for you, Frank, Mickey Mantle, to be playing for all these historic teams in New York City and living and socializing in a city that cherished the three of you and, of course, a number of other fantastic athletes that graced New York franchise uniforms. Kind of share with us what was that like, that era, that time, living in New York City, being a star. You and Frank.
Well, I'd up until then down in Texas, I'd only been in three states. Texas, I was born. New Mexico, went to school, and then up in Oklahoma, living with my granddad a little bit. And you know, that's three states. I'd never been too far out of the city limits, you might say. And then to get on a plane and go to Salem, Oregon for training camp and then transfer to New York City. You know, I looked up, I saw one building had more bricks in it than some of the towns I lived in growing up.
Anita just mentioned, Don, that, you know, you played in New York City during a time where there were so many prolific athletes, and specifically you had the pleasure to not just play with Frank Gifford, but you also played with Joe Namath. And it's interesting because the two of them in particular translated their skill sets to television, movie appearances, advertisements. You know, from watching them from up close, from afar as well, what was it about Frank Gifford and guys like Joe Namath that you think they had success outside of the football field or off the football field?
Well, they were really teammates and all. A quick comment over on Namath. You know, Joe came to New York and so forth and was a big star coming in there, but he and Nashley Gifford, they were such great and ability-wise, but also down-to-earth individuals. Matter of fact, there was a little bit of odd write-ups about drinking and carousing and staying out late and so forth at all, say with Namath. Well, but at the same time, since we worked out at 12 o'clock, noon or be in the meeting room at 12 o'clock, you know, some of those guys could go out and stay, you know, till 2 in the morning and still go home and get 8 hours sleep. They were dedicated individuals, and Namath was voted our captain of the offensive team. So that kind of shows you definitely some of the things you heard and read about Namath, you could divide it. And then his football ability, whatever you heard about him, really, you could multiply it. And they were just as plain as could be, Namath, and so was Frank. You know, he was dedicated, and he'd share things, you know, with me, just and I just watched him. Also, Kyle wrote.
It looks like we may have lost Don Maynard, unfortunately, a bad connection on his end, but we certainly appreciate him for giving his time here on Big Blue Kickoff Live to reminisce about Frank Gifford. He played together with Frank on the 1958 Giants team that went to the NFL championship game, lost to the Colts, the greatest game ever played. Also got into, obviously, what it was like off the field, Frank Gifford and Joe Namath, certainly two personalities, Anita. And that's what I think of when I think of Frank Gifford. I don't necessarily think about the football player, obviously, with him playing way before my time. You think of him more in the broadcast booth. But, you know, there was something about him, what he brought to the game from a personality standpoint.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because, you know, obviously, same boat you are. I wonder how many of the guys we're in here broadcasting. I wonder how many of the Giants players. I mean, they're even younger than us, Lance. I mean, what are you know the guys that are playing in the NFL right now? You know, what is their take? You say, hey, you know, Frank Gifford passed away. What's the first thing that comes to mind for them? I mean, I even think that for them, Frank's time on Monday Night Football was way before they were born. So, you know, do they even understand how important his role was, not only on the football field and, of course, being a Giant, but transitioning into the broadcast booth and how epic that Monday night broadcast was, how it really changed our culture and society and in sports. Every Monday night it was a happening. But with that being said, you know, one thing that I'm reading up more today, because obviously I want to, you know, I knew that this was a day to celebrate the life of, and so I wanted to know more about Frank Gifford. And one thing I keep on reading is that how, you know, he made the Giants cool. You know what I mean? He made the Giants cool. He made Monday Night Football cool. And I think you know this. I teach a sports branding class at NYU. And that's what it's really all about. It's organizations aligning themselves with certain players that just exemplify everything they want their organization to represent. And Frank Gifford was one of those. Everything I'm reading, it's like Frank Gifford was one of those guys. And it's just as John Mara said, you know, he's one of the best Giants. He's a giant. You know what I mean? Like he's. And understandably so. Like everything I'm reading today, I spent a good hour and a half online today, just reading stories and whatnot, and just what a phenomenal life, what a phenomenal athlete, and how blessed are the Giants that was kind of a representation of the Giants brand. It's been a really interesting morning for me.
We actually got Don Maynard back on the line. We had a bad connection, so we'll try to squeeze in another question or two before we continue to move on here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Don, we appreciate you coming back on the line here. We must have lost you in terms of the connection, but you know, we were just talking about the impact that Frank Gifford had off the field, and you were reminiscing about that. Considering that when you came into the league, when Frank Gifford came into the league, you know, the NFL was not nearly as popular as what it is today, and baseball, as you can attest to, and some other sports were ahead of football. What did Frank Gifford do to help elevate the game, Don, and help players like you become true personalities, specifically within New York City?
I just think he was such a class act and such an inspiration to everybody that ever saw him play or meet him. He was down to earth, and like I say, you know, a lot of times there's some veterans that won't ever talk to rookies, but I like to think he kind of took me under his arm just a little bit and told me I could be as good as I wanted to be, just wherever you go and whatever you do, make it outstanding or above board. You know, just like Mom and Dad taught us.
one of the games that jumps out to me from what I've read, the 1958 NFL championship game, Don. You, Frank Gifford, Pat Summerall was even on that team. It's amazing how many people went on to have bigger careers even after football. Now, what do you remember from that game? It's called the greatest game ever played. Now, a number of people from the newer generation can only read about it, but what made that game so unique that it still owns that title even today?
Well, I think the fact that at the end of regulation, you know, it was tied, and that had been the first time that had ever happened. And then they did the coin toss out there for the overtime portion of it, and then we won the flip, and then they kicked off, and I was the first guy to touch a football in an overtime game. So I ran it back, I believe, about 15, 18 yards, and then we went on, and Frank had a fine game and so forth, and other great Giants that went later, several went in the Hall of Fame. And it was a top memorial game to all of us, naturally.
Baltimore Colts and the New York Giants in that 1958 NFL championship game, one of five appearances for Frank Gifford in that NFL championship game. Don Maynard, Pro Football Hall of Fame wide receiver, joining us. Don, before we let you go, you know, Frank went on to have a second career in the broadcast booth. And while we lost you, Anita and I were going back and forth in terms of, you know, what he did on Monday Night Football. And I'm sure you watched from afar and you saw his broadcasting career continue to carry out. You know, what jumped out to you about his broadcasting career? And why do you think, you know, he was such a good fit for television?
Probably the main thing, you know, in anything, when somebody's talking about something, he could broadcast unbelievable and make you think that you was right there at the game itself, because he played the game, he knew the game, and he understood the angles and all that needed to be seen. To be the same thing that would make it just as if every listener, even on the radio, was right there in person. And I think that was, you know, the big thing.
Don, greatly appreciate the time and the insights. Thanks so much for coming on the program.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
You got it. Don Maynard, Pro Football Hall of Fame wide receiver, played for the Giants in 1958 with Frank Gifford, and then went on to play for the Jets.
The one thing I'm going to walk away from this interview with, and I love that he shared this, is that when he came in, Frank took him underneath his wing, and he said, "I learned from Frank in one season what most guys probably would take 3-4 seasons to learn." That's pretty special. Pretty solid.
The other thing that was notable about that team and even Frank Gifford's tenure with the Giants that I think probably gets overlooked, Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry, Anita, were assistant coaches on that Giants staff when Gifford first came into the league, which is amazing considering what those two individuals went on to do as head coaches. So, you know, it just goes to show you the history of this franchise, not just necessarily the players, the coaches, but so much started with the Giants, considering it's one of the oldest franchises in the National Football League. So we certainly appreciate Don Maynard for coming on to share his memories about Frank Gifford, certainly the entire NFL community, as well as the Giants organization, mourning the loss of Frank Gifford, who passed away at the age of 84 over the weekend. We're going to shift gears now to the current Giants. If you have thoughts, if you want to reminisce about Frank Gifford, I know we have a number of longtime passionate Giants fans who have been around for decades, who may have even come across Frank Gifford while he has had ties to this organization. Feel free to give us a call if you'd like to reminisce, but we'll also be talking about the current Giants as they get set to go to Cincinnati during the course of this week to get prepared for the first preseason game. Let's start things off on the phone lines at 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat. Andrew is in Stanhope. Andrew, what's happening?
Yeah, broadcasting, and as a player, he was nothing but smooth. You know, he broadcast, he spoke smoothly, and when you watch those highlights, he was smooth as silk, the way he moved. And I just wanted to say that it's a sad day, of course, but I hope that I'm remembered so positively, and everyone says positive things. It kind of, in a way, reminds me of my own father. Like, everybody likes him positive, and everyone always describes the Giants as a class organization. So he epitomized that. And quickly about the coaches, Vince Lombardi and Tom Landry, the same time we had Bill Parcells, Bill Belichick, and Tom Coughlin on the staff all at the same time. But I just want to say I look forward to the Emeritus and the Tishes having a tribute day, and I'll leave it at that. I look forward to that day. Thanks.
You got it, Andrew. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much. And nothing has been laid out yet, obviously, with this news being so sudden, but I'm sure the Giants are going to do something to honor not just Gifford, but Ann Mara, too, who passed away earlier this year as well.
Absolutely.
Let's move along on the phone lines. Johnny is in Montreal. Johnny, what's happening?
Good. Thanks for taking my call. Had a two-part question here, if you guys have a moment. First thing I had a question on was a linebacker spot. Just wondering how Jameel McClain's doing, and if he's not practicing, who's taking reps for him? And then second question I had was, are we looking at possibly getting Evan Mathis for a workout at right guard and moving Schwartz to tackle? I don't know if you guys know anything about that.
Well, that's pure speculation, if anything. I mean, the Giants don't comment publicly on who they bring in for workouts. Jake Long, they have publicly commented about him. He's been brought in twice for workouts or at least meet and greets. But Evan Mathis is a free agent, as far as we're concerned, once he parted ways with the Philadelphia Eagles. So there's no news on that front. Your first question about Jameel McClain, Tom Coughlin addressed the media over the weekend. He's going to be out for a while, is what Tom Coughlin stated. Because remember, he's had some history with a neck injury dating back to his days with the Baltimore Ravens. So, you know, the stinger that he suffered during practice, they're going to obviously have further examination, further tests. There's no timetable for his return. And as far as what the linebacking mix looks like right now, you know, John Beeson's been out in the middle to begin with, in addition to JT Thomas has been utilized. And Jonathan Casillas has actually gotten a lot of work in with the first team. So he has taken advantage of his reps. Jameel McClain had been mixing and matching in a variety of positions, given his versatility. So with McClain out, I don't really think it impacts too much with respect to the starting group, although we're going to get the depth chart momentarily, so we'll know exactly what the Giants are thinking as they get set for their first preseason game.
Okay, great. And what do you think of Evan Mathis, though? Like, I know he's 32, but do you think that he could come in and maybe if they sign him to, like, a 1 or 2 year, do you think that he could contribute? Well, I know in the run-blocking game last year with Philly, he was pretty dominant. So
I'm curious
as to what you guys think on that.
I mean, this is the thing with Mathis, is that from what's being reported is he wants a pretty hefty chunk of change. Now, I do believe Mathis is going to end up somewhere. I'm sure Giants fans would love for him to end up here, considering that there's more injury issues with the offensive line. But keep in mind, this is a tactic that majority teams in the NFL will do, and that is whoever's going to sign Mathis, whether it's the Giants or another team, they more than likely won't sign him until week two. Because if you sign him week two, then you're not guaranteed. You're not on the hook for his entire contract, and apparently he wants a lot of money. So I do believe Mathis will get signed somewhere. I just don't think we're going to see it happen until week two.
Okay, great. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
You got to appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for chiming in, Johnny.
I'm sorry. I was reading something online. With Jameel McClain, who's been getting? I know obviously Beeson, but it's Herzlick, right? Who's been getting the majority of kind of more work per se at that middle linebacker position to fill? That's coming in for Beeson. It's Herzlick, right?
Well, I mean, Herzlick is certainly in the mix, but I mean, they've been mixing and matching so many players during the course of practice. It's really hard to say who would be penciled in if McClain perhaps misses time. And speaking of that topic, they just released the unofficial depth chart. It's up on Giants.com.
Let's get to it.
So it actually is perfectly connected to the phone call that we
Drum
just
roll,
received.
Please.
So this is what the linebackers look like, at least. Beeson's at middle linebacker, JT Thomas at weak side, and Devon Kennard at strong side. That's how the linebackers are listed. This is, remember, the unofficial depth chart.
That's normal. That's like what we've been, right?
Correct. McClain is listed as the backup to Beeson at the middle. Herzlick is listed as the backup to Kennard on the strong side, and Jonathan Casillas the backup to JT Thomas on the weak side.
But we know Herzlick has played middle linebacker before, so out of Jonathan and Mark, I think it's safe to assume
that Mark would be slid into that middle.
Would be sliding.
Absolutely,
to the middle.
Okay. I would agree with that.
Okay.
Corners, DRC and Prince, no surprise there. The two safeties, Bennett Jackson and Landon Collins, and Bennett Jackson has looked really good during the course of training camp, so it's not necessarily a surprise that he's been penciled in already on the unofficial depth chart. Cooper Taylor and Mykel Thompson are listed as the two backups. Thompson, the backup to Jackson. Taylor, the backup to Collins. Now they've been playing a lot of left and right safety. Anita, on this unofficial depth chart, Jackson is listed as the strong safety. Landon Collins is listed as the free safety. I know a lot of people have called in before when it comes down to the regular season how perhaps the safeties will be aligned. That's what the unofficial depth chart looks like at this point with respect to that. On the defensive line, Cullen Jenkins, Jonathan Hankins, Robert Ayers, and Kerry Wynn.
Wow.
Wynn and Ayers are the two defensive ends. Hankins and Jenkins are listed as your defensive tackles.
Interesting. So DeMontre Moore not getting the starting nod at one of the end positions. That is interesting.
And keep in mind, once again, this is unofficial, so things are subject to change moving forward.
And also you have double O behind Kerry Wynn. And I think it's important to note that you have George Selvey third in line at that right defensive end position.
Behind DeMontre Moore in terms of the defensive end breakdown. And there's a lot of depth. I mean, it's something that we've talked about in great detail, Anita, over the last few weeks, how many guys they can mix and match heading into the season.
Also, they have Marcus Kuhn and Jay Bromley, both in front of Kendrick Ellis. I think that's important to note as well.
And Marcus Kuhn worked out in Los Angeles with Jay Glazer. That's why he really bulked up over the course of the offseason. And Robert Nunn spoke to the media a few days ago and talked about Bromley and Kuhn. The reason why he's been happy with their progress is, you know, they were very motivated during the offseason. They came back even more animated as they started training camp. And every time, this is the one thing that jumped out to me. He said, every time I try to correct something during practice, I make a point in the classroom, you never have to repeat it again. They digest, they understand what they then need to apply on the football field. That was something that was interesting that Robert Nunn pointed out with respect to the defensive linemen, specifically Bromley and Kuhn. Real quickly on the offense, and then we will get back to your phone calls. I know a number of people want to weigh in at 201-939-4513. So here's what the offensive line looks like. Left guard, Justin Pugh. Center, Weston Richburg. Flowers is at left tackle. Jeff Schwartz is your right guard. Marshall Newhouse is your right tackle. So no major surprises there. That was the alignment before they had to play a little bit of game of musical chairs once a couple of guys got banged up during the course of training camp. But that's what the unofficial depth chart is, left to right. Flowers, Pugh, Richburg, Schwartz, and Newhouse.
Now, this is where it really gets interesting. Share with them what's going on with the wide receiver position.
The wide receiver position, which has listed three, by the way, on the unofficial depth chart. Cruz, Beckham, and Randall are your starters. Now, your backups, Dwayne Harris, Preston Parker, Corey Washington. Washington behind Randall, Parker behind Cruz, Harris behind Beckham. And then Jeremy Davis is listed behind Corey Washington. So Randall, Washington, Jeremy Davis in terms of the linemen. James Jones is fourth on the depth chart behind Odell Beckham. But again, it's very early. This is a preliminary report. Once they see guys go at it in the preseason and so forth, you know, things are certainly subject to change. But they have three wide receivers listed on the unofficial depth chart.
That's
I think
fun.
That's something that's interesting.
That's a lot of fun.
Absolutely, in terms of spreading the wealth.
I like that. And of course, you mentioned Fells, right?
Daniel Fells, we should note that, is listed as the starting tight end. Larry Donnell is behind him.
Mm-hmm.
And Rashad Jennings is listed as the starting running back with Andre Williams and Shane Vereen following. So,
right.
Few surprises in terms of the offensive
lineman,
Anita.
Yeah, but fun stuff to talk about, that's for sure. And Fells, really, again, not a surprise for me because this is something that I mentioned last week, and that is with an offensive line that's dealing with some injuries and some really big question marks, Fells is the better blocking tight end that's on this roster. So it's not a surprise to me that he's listed number one over Larry Donnell because this Giants team is going to need his help on that offensive line more so than having Larry Donnell go out for receptions, which also, in my opinion, explains why they're going with three wide receiver set as their starting roster.
So that is the unofficial depth chart. If you want to weigh in, you have thoughts on that, you give us a ring at 201-939-4513. You want to reflect, reminisce on the life and career of Frank Gifford, that is certainly up for discussion as well. Hashtag Giants Chat. Let's head back to the lines. Christian is in New York. Christian, welcome aboard. What do you have for us?
Hey, well, first of all, my thoughts and prayers go out to Frank Gifford's family and close friends. It's always tough to lose somebody. I didn't know too much about him because I started watching in the 90s.
Understandable. Well, that's why I think a lot of people don't realize what he did as a football player, Christian. Most people, and probably yourself included, you may have seen him a little bit on television as a commentator, but the majority of us know him more for his TV work than perhaps his accomplishments on the football field.
Yeah, I didn't know a whole lot about him as a football player, but I wanted to mention Landon Collins and how a few writers have mentioned that he hasn't exactly been impressive yet in camp, but as a strong safety, you know, you're not really allowed to be laying hits on your own team the way you would in games. And so I think his biggest impact will come in when he's actually an option to be, you know, laying people out on the field. I think over the middle, receivers are going to be a little hesitant, you know, looking for where he's at. And I think that's where a lot of his zone coverage will end up being played. Not so much single high, but, you know, coming down and making receivers worry.
Well, you're right. I mean, there's only so much you could take away from training camp practices, especially with only a few in full pads. I think we're going to really start to see his true impact when you get to Friday's game against the Bengals and even some of the joint practices with the Bengals where, you know, maybe he could get a little bit looser and they could try to showcase a variety of different views where they want to align him on the field. But, you know, right now it's very early to say, well, he hasn't necessarily been as aggressive in trying to lay people out because, as you noted, the last thing the Giants want to see is it get too competitive where you're hurting some of your own wide receivers. You're not going to gain anything in the long run from that.
Yeah, definitely. And since that's probably going to be one of his specialties is, you know, breaking up passes and making receivers worry, I just really hope that there's not a lot of helmet-to-helmet with him. I hope that he really just has a feel for, you know, clean hits, even like hard hits, but clean hits, because that would really be unfortunate if he's getting penalized a lot.
Well, that's why the preseason games are so valuable, Christian, because you get a feel for not just the opponent you're going up against, but you also get a feel for how the officials are going to officiate the game. So that's why I always said the true colors of these rookies are going to come out once we get into preseason games, more so than perhaps what you see day in and day out at practice.
Yeah, so, you know, for a strong safety, I don't think it's really fair to, you know, look into the type of impact they're having in training camp or even in practice because they, like you said, you know, they're really not trying to hurt their own team.
Which is completely understandable, Christian, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in. Let's move along here on the phone lines. Stephanie is in West Virginia. Stephanie, what's happening?
Good afternoon, Anita and Lance. Thanks for taking my call.
Welcome in.
I want to comment on the Frank Gifford death. Now, I hate to quote Paul DeTino, but I grew up watching Monday Night Football in the 80s and the 90s, and some of those classic games that he called, you know, Giants 49ers, Giants Redskins, Giants Eagles. I could go on and on and on. But yesterday, when I was watching the highlight reels on him of his career as a football player on NFL Network, I was like, wow, what an amazing football player. And some of those plays seemed like he was, like, doing read option type stuff. And, you know, I understand it was the halfback option, things of that nature. And, like, you know, most of the younger generation, they only know Frank Gifford as Kathy Gifford's husband or something like that. But he was a great football player, a true blue Giant, I tweeted out. And a great announcer. Monday Night Football, again, I hate to cite Paul DeTino, Monday Night Football in the 80s and the 90s, especially in the 80s when the 49ers were the dynasty, it seemed like a main event. You know, you come home from high school and stuff, and you wait for the Monday Night matchup. You know, Chicago Bears, Redskins, whoever it was. Now, focus your hand on the football team. I understand Jermaine McClain, is out for knee injury. Is it a slight possible chance that the New York Giants give Dwight Freeney a call for linebacker, you know. And thanks for taking my call.
Appreciate the phone call, Stephanie. Thanks so much for weighing in. The question was about Dwight Freeney, who is a free agent. He was with the San Diego Chargers last season, also well known for his days with the Indianapolis Colts. You know, with Freeney, you have to understand, he's getting up there in age, and there's been a lot of mileage on the legs. I know that there had been rumors that perhaps he would rejoin the San Diego Chargers, but that remains to be solidified there. I mean, I think at this point, to answer your question, Stephanie, you know, you look at the Giants depth chart, and we went through the unofficial depth chart. They brought in two linebackers, Casillas and Thomas, because they feel they're going to impact not just at linebacker, but special teams specifically. So you gain some depth there. Victor Butler was another name who's a polished veteran that they brought in too. Let's not overlook him. Devon Kennard. I mean, I think they're happy with some of the younger options and also some of the vets that they have, as opposed to perhaps a need of going after somebody that, you know, has gone through the wear and tear of the NFL.
No, I'm with you. I think they're extremely happy with this linebacking core. I've said this before. I think the linebacking core could arguably be the best position of all three elements of the defense. You know, defensive line, I think you've got some question marks. I mean, granted, listen, Kerry Wynn and Robert Ayers are definitely going to be given an opportunity. They're listed as the starters right now on this, what are we calling this?
The unofficial
depth chart. But obviously some question marks there. Granted, a lot of question marks with the safety position. Right now, Bennett Jackson is that starter opposite Landon Collins, but this is a battle, and the battle is going to continue to take place for another 3 weeks. I think Devon Kennard, John Beeson, JT Thomas, I think these guys, we've known this going in, and they've performed. And John Beeson has said that he feels good. He feels healthy. He talked about his connection and you know, what he's developed already with Spags. I think this linebacking core, I've said this before, I think this is one of the best linebacking cores I've seen since I've been covering the Giants.
Well, there's a lot of versatility in this group. Mm-hmm. I'll give you that. I still say the defensive line, in my opinion, has the most depth, if you're going to break it down just by that.
Depth, yes, but in regard to going into the season, knowing what you have and having realistic expectations, I like the linebacking core. I just think there's too many questions on the defensive line. I think there's too many questions at the safety position in regard to the secondary. It's tangible. It's like you know what you're getting, in a sense, with that linebacking core. You know what I mean? Like, it's just like I feel it's the strongest area right now.
Let's head back to the phone lines. Matt is in Ocean. Matt, what's happening? Matt, are you there? Matt, a man of very few words, apparently, today. Oh, Matt,
oh,
you hear us? What's happening, Matt? All right, Matt seems to have a bad connection. So let's move along. Let's try Rocky in Panama City. No, we lost Rocky? Okay. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on the conversation using hashtag Giants Chat. Let's actually take a look at Twitter. We want to involve people who certainly can't get to the phones today, as I take a glance at the tweets coming in on a variety of different topics. Let's take a look at what people are weighing in. Let's see, Easy at Easy_BKNY. Who, according to the depth chart, is going to be the slot corner, J'Ron Hosley or Shockey Brown? And I don't believe they actually designated a slot corner on this unofficial depth chart, and they did not. They only have two corners listed, but I would say Tremaine McBride is certainly in the mix, J'Ron Hosley is certainly in the mix, and Shockey Brown. All three of those names would be in the mix in terms of assuming that role. I would even throw in maybe a guy like Chandler Fenner too.
Yeah, but let me ask you this. Considering that McBride, they have McBride, it goes DRC, Hosley, and then McBride, because Brown and Hosley both sit in the second spot, are you more like...
I don't know if you can look at it like that.
We've been feeling it's McBride. We've been feeling it's McBride, but okay.
I just wouldn't read into who's backing up DRC and Prince. Okay. I look at that as they feel that in the event that they need to move two other wide receivers to the outside, they perhaps feel more comfortable with Hosley and Brown on the outside as opposed to perhaps a guy like McBride. And that's only me reading into the unofficial depth chart.
Right.
That's how I would interpret that. Or it could be where you're leaning towards, where that would be the next guy in line to perhaps be the slot or the additional starting corner, depending on when they go into nickel formations and so forth. So I think you could go in either direction. There really is no right or wrong answer at this point with respect to that topic. We'll get back to the phone calls in a second here. I just want to look through a few more tweets. I know a number of people have questions about the depth chart and so forth. At D_Ricker81, he says he's surprised he thought Kenrick Ellis would be listed as a starter in terms of the unofficial depth chart. And let's actually take a look where Kenrick Ellis is listed. Kenrick Ellis is actually the third defensive tackle on the depth chart after Cullen Jenkins, Marcus Kuhn, then Kenrick Ellis. And then the other group of defensive tackles is Hankins, Bromley, and then Carliff Taylor. So that's interesting. That I'm a little bit surprised myself with in terms of Ellis being third on that depth chart right now in terms of one of the defensive tackle spots. Let's take a look at a tweet here from ColeWiss88. Not trying to see Adrian Robinson over Jerome Cunningham. He's flashed more in the offseason than Robinson has over the course of his tenure. Remember, it's still early. Cunningham has looked good. I would agree. I think Cunningham is one of the standout players during the course of training camp, and that could very well change. But the Giants also, remember, they want to see Jerome Cunningham in a few games. It's one thing to do it in practice. You also want to make sure that it can translate into gameplay. But he has been one of the standout players, or one of the unknown commodities, at least, entering camp.
Yeah, so are you surprised that he's...
Well, right now, he's listed behind
third, right?
Adrian Robinson.
Yeah.
So he's actually technically the fourth tight end on the list, because it's Daniel Fells, then it's Larry Dinnell, Adrian Robinson, and then Cunningham.
I know Paul Dottino's been very, very impressed with him. On the days that I can't be here, I typically get my day recap from Paul Dottino, and he's speaking volumes about that young man.
I think a dissertation would be perhaps a little bit more fitting indeed.
I
don't know if a recap does it justice.
Yes,
you describe Paul Dottino breaking down a practice. You know, you got to clean out the ears, you got to make sure that you have patience, you're animated, and so forth. Let's head back to the phone lines. Rocky is in Panama City. Rocky, what's happening?
What's up, Lance? Nice to meet you.
Doing well, Rocky. How's everything with you?
Oh, I just got a couple questions. Is Frank Gifford and Bruce Matthews the only NFL players in history to make a Pro Bowl in three different spots?
What do you mean in three different spots? Meaning three different positions?
Yeah.
That's a great question. I have all of his Pro Bowls listed in front of me by year, but I don't have them designated in terms of what position he was representing at that time. So I'd have to try to look into that. You may be right about that. That's the first time I'm hearing that.
Yeah, I think he made it as a running back, flanker, and a defensive back.
It wouldn't surprise me, considering he played all three of those positions. Defensive backfield is where he started out in his career.
Are you talking about the Pro Bowl?
Yeah, the Pro Bowl. But his question was, is Bruce Matthews the only other player in NFL history that has accomplished that at multiple positions?
Okay.
That I don't know, obviously, off the top of my head.
Okay, I should ask Paul that, huh?
Well, I mean, listen, even if he knows that would be impressive, Rocky. You know, that's not necessarily a fact that's dangling around there.
Okay,
what else you got?
As far as McClain being kind of banged up on defense, I was wondering about Akil Whitlock. Is there any chance that, or have y'all heard if they're going to play him any at, like, Sam or Mike? Because as an undersized nose tackle there at Wake Forest, at 250, he racked up, I think, 18.5 sacks in four seasons, which was pretty impressive to me, showing that he could shed the blocks and get and rush the passer. Is there any talk of maybe that?
Well, you're referring to the fact that he was both a defensive and an offensive player in college. Right now, he's penciled in as the backup fullback, and that's really where the majority of his reps have been. So I don't foresee, unless things drastically change, that they're going to work him into the defensive side of the ball.
Okay, and just one more comment, and then I'll go. As far as James Jones, I think right now he's probably a better option at third receiver than Ruben Randall, considering he knows the offense and he's a bit, I just think he's a lot better than Randall at this point.
Well, Ruben Randall, remember, is coming off a very strong finish to last season. He has familiarity with the system. I know James Jones does too, going back to his time with Ben McAdoo with the Green Bay Packers. But, you know, you're certainly going to give the edge, Rocky, to a player who has been here before, regardless of what James Jones brings to the table in terms of his resume. Could things change as the preseason progresses? Absolutely. Remember, this is completely unofficial at this point, subject to change. But I think in the early goings, I'm not surprised that Randle, Cruz, and Beckham are your top three wideouts. That makes the most sense given they have the most familiarity with this specific system here in New York.
Okay, thank you, guys.
You got it. Appreciate the phone call, Rocky. Thanks so much for weighing in.
James
Jones is listed right there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he's the fourth one on the Odell Beckham line.
Okay.
And they have Dwayne Harris, Preston Parker, and Corey Washington, just to reestablish that as the first backups in line behind Randle, Cruz, and Beckham, respectively.
Right.
That's at least how the depth chart looks. You know, we didn't actually even look at special teams. We should just at least notate that real quickly.
I think it's important to note. So you're kicking your punt returner is Dwayne Harris. Then for kick, it goes Preston, Orleans, and Andre Williams. In punt return, it goes Reuben, Hosley, and then Odell. Odell fourth. In punt return, just goes to show you how important his health is for this team, and you know, he's the last choice, last line of defense in regard to punt return.
Let's try to squeeze in one more call here. Derek is in Atlanta. Derek, what's happening?
Hey, Lance and Anita. I was fortunate to come to the Meadowlands last weekend and see some practice. I actually stayed in the Hilton across the street and ran into Cruz and a couple of my favorite Giants, Rashad and all. But
nice. Did they lay out the red carpet for you, Derek, at the hotel?
Say it again?
I said, did they lay out the red carpet? Did you get the red carpet treatment at the hotel?
The hotel treated me well. I mean, it was nice to see the Giants there. They were kind of headed to a meeting, so they only had enough time to say a word or two to me. But, you know, I was at practice a few days, and, you know, I was going to give you a couple of players that kind of stood out to me.
Sure.
Jerome Cunningham stood out. Demontre Moore stood out to me. I saw the speed on Keem Hunt. Corey Washington looked good. I couldn't believe how fluent Cruz was looking on the field, considering his injury. I could have bet anything that he wouldn't look that good. Of course, Beckham just looks flawless. And Larry the Nail just amazed me how big he was. You know, I'm like, oh, this guy can block out the moon. But I was wondering if you thought that the Demontre Moore position in the lineup right now is due to his fight. Because when I was at camp, this guy was going around defensive tackles like nothing. And he was in the backfield almost at snap. So I'm like, how could he be behind anybody right now as far as position on a defensive end?
Well, I think part of it may also be the fact that, remember, Demontre Moore missed some time when he was finishing up classes in college. So in terms of digesting and learning the ins and outs of the scheme, he was playing a little bit of catch-up. That may be probably the best rationale, Derek, as to why he's a backup as opposed to listed as a starter right now. But once again, if he continues to show what you saw during practice, it's not as if moving into a starting position is out of the question.
Yeah, I just have to note that he was big. I also noted that I wanted to keep an eye on Kuhn because there's a lot of criticism with him last year. I wanted to kind of look at what he looked at. I mean, personally, he looks like he's really fit. But I don't see the penetration through the line. I do see him taking down blockers and holding his ground, and that may be good. I just thought I saw a little bit more when I saw Kendrick Ellick and everything play, actually penetration, pushing tackles back to the backfield. So, and there's another position that, you know, I just want to make a note on. But I think Kuhn does look good, you know, better than he did last year. And my last comment is this offense and this team is very young, and this offense looks almost flawless. Vereen coming out of the backfield looks very good. And what I was going to say is only thing I noticed in the offense is that the right tackle spot wasn't playing very well. And I was wondering if you think that that position could be the cause of the Giants not doing well this year. And I'll talk to you guys later.
I appreciate the phone call, Derek. Thanks so much. I'm glad you had an opportunity to come down to practice.
I just want to comment really quick before you answer his question in regard to the defensive line. listen, there's something about, you know, it's horrible what happened with JPP, but by that happening and really not knowing when JPP is going to join this team and this roster and be able to suit up and play, I think it was added motivation for the competition. And not that it necessarily should be, but I think we're human. We're athletes. That's what happens. And I really think that when and Ayers kind of saw an opportunity here that, you know what, I could become a starter in the NFL. And so I think the competition at that defensive end position was elevated a little bit with JPP not being here in camp. I think that's what happened here.
I would agree. I mean, yeah. I think that a lot of people see an opportunity to step up. No argument there.
Right.
In terms of the right tackle spot, you know, Pat Flaherty, the offensive line coach, said right now Marshall Newhouse is the right tackle. They have been moving people around, obviously, because of the number of injuries that they've had to deal with at training camp. But until we see preseason games, it's very difficult to evaluate the group as a whole, considering, you know, the unit hasn't been on the field every single day in practice. That's why I always say, first game up against the Bengals, assuming this starting group is going to be on the field, that'll be the first taste of how they gel and how they perform. And I think that will help further the conversation. So with that being said, certainly appreciate everybody for chiming in on the conversation. Thanks to Don Maynard, Pro Football Hall Fame wide receiver for reminiscing about Frank Gifford.
And yeah, great stories. Definitely. I feel more in the know in regard to the life of Frank Gifford after he joined us. Hopefully everybody enjoyed that interview. If you did miss it, of course, you can check it out. It'll be posted up on Giants.com a little bit later on this afternoon.
Big Blue Kickoff Live will be live from Cincinnati over the next few days, and we will continue our programming throughout the rest of the week, getting you set for the preseason game, so stay locked to Giants.com. For Anita Marks, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We'll speak to you throughout the rest of the week. Have a good one.
Here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Got it on the field. He's got through. 35, 30.
Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.